Welcome back to another episode of Sense8. I'm here with my partner in crime. Who are you? What's your name?
My name is Hermelaine.
How are you doing?
I'm great. Yeah, I'm
What
having.
makes you great?
I'm in this process of finishing my book, my next book, my fourth, it is.
Your fourth book.
So I noticed that I'm in this really very warm space where everything falls together like effortlessly. Like all the pieces in the puzzle start to emerge now from the work I've done over the last few years. Yeah, so that's feels very rewarding.
Sounds rewarding to me. Wow, writing a book and four.
Yes.
Are they
Yes.
in
So this is
English?
the second, this is the second one about my own process. So the first one, or the third one, was about discovering energy and going to the Barbara Brennan School, going through this process of being, well, more intuitive and more like in touch with my healing capacity and the energy of everything. And now this one is more about the feminine, the divine feminine, and the awakening to that particular place or being in myself. Yeah.
I can't wait for it to be published. You're going to have to send me a translated copy.
Yeah, I will. I will. Yes.
On book signing tours.
Yeah, so it's going to be, the title is going to be, well, I'm not sure in English because it's not translated yet, but it's going to be like the Nine Feminine Secrets.
The Nine Feminine Secrets. I like that.
So, how are you?
I am great. I wasn't when we first started talking prior to recording. I was exhausted. Yeah, I feel great. Lots of unfolding, lots of things coming up. I'll be doing a speech or a lecture or presentation, whatever you want to call it, sometime this week. So January 28th.
Yeah.
For the Barbara Brennan
Looking
School.
forward. Looking forward. What's it about? What's your subject?
My subject, well, it's the theme is around indigenous cultures. So there were three of us, Rebecca Ellens, who was a former teacher at the Barbara Brennan School, spoke about her native or indigenous people of America culture. Specifically Cherokee. Amy Alston talked about her Hawaiian heritage, and she had on one of her elders who gave a great presentation. So I will be discussing my Guinean culture and as well as my native people or indigenous people of Turtle Island, also known as America, also of the Cherokee Nation. So,
Sounds really interesting.
we shall see. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah.
So yeah, it's I think that I'd like to talk or share not just the culture, I'd like to talk about how the culture is looked at or perceived by people outside of the continent of Africa. This is a lot of misinformation. So yeah, some of the music, maybe the dancing, how the contributions to, the entire planet, that people from Guinea, the different nations or tribes. So stay tuned. It'll be recorded, it'll be on Zoom. We'll let you know.
Yeah, please do.
So that's where I am.
So, what are you going to talk about today?
Well, I am talk I'd like to talk about how to create healthy communication.
So, why is that important?
Well, I don't know. You tell me, why is healthy communication important in your world? Why would healthy communication be important?
So for me, it all has to do with openness, openness to the other and to yourself, and about then exploring the truth,
Exploring the truth.
or you, like the middle part, like the place between you and me,
Right.
and how we meet. I think that's where we meet. I
Where
think
we
that's the
meet.
healthy. Healthy communication that you meet and connect.
So make contact.
Yeah.
So yeah, that I think those are really important pieces that you named. It is where we meet. And there are certain things that I look for in healthy communication. It's not, I didn't always communicate effectively. You know my background, having been bullied and things like that as a child. There are pieces, I don't trust everybody. So I'll just say that. I don't open up about my world. Ironic that I'm doing that here for the entire world to listen to.
Yeah, nobody sees you. You're still safe.
That's it, exactly what you named, safe, safety. Okay, so the person communicating, the speaker, needs to feel a level of safety or trust. Trust that the person who's receiving whatever's being said will not hurt them, shame them in any way, or turn it against them. Do you think you agree or not agree?
Yeah, the only thing I was thinking about is that it's on both ends. You know, when I had discussions with my former husband, then he would be the one speaking, maybe, and I could feel unsafe. You know, then I'm maybe on the receiving end and the listener, but I feel unsafe by him, you know, by what he is saying. So there has to be a certain level of non-judgment in the communication.
Good. I
So,
like that.
yeah. Yeah.
Non-judgment, also blaming.
Yeah, so I felt often blamed, and then I would defend myself, and then I would rant just to, you know, just to break his power over me in a way. Yeah. And then he wouldn't feel safe.
Right.
So I would be also be overpowering, maybe in my words or my energy. I can become very, you know, explosive. So then he would be feeling unsafe.
Right. So
And
both of
he
you are
would
defending.
retract.
Yeah.
He would retract and not say anything.
Right.
Yeah.
So that would be considered unhealthy communication.
Yeah.
And how I,
And between two very aware people, and that's also like a pitfall. You know, we were so aware, and we were so aware of each other's defenses also that we could really easily name them and you know, and make the other one feel bad about it.
Yes, that often happens. That often happens because people aren't what?
It's sort of spiritual relationships. It's like, oh man. Yeah.
Using spiritual knowledge as a weapon,
Yes, exactly.
that's messed up.
Yeah, it is. It is, but you don't notice it because
It happens.
it's so refined and so clever that you don't notice it really.
Yeah, well, that happens a lot with people who are spiritual, and there's the power differential between a person who has the knowledge or the psychological or psycho-spiritual knowledge and the other partner doesn't.
Yeah.
and they seem like the expert.
Yeah.
And that other person is not able to receive or feels yeah. judged.
Yeah.
What were you going to yeah. say with that look on?
No, that's interesting because, you know, I was going through school and I had my practice already, but then I still thought he was the authority. So I would still think that mm-hmm. the things he was saying were right. Even though I was, you know, quite aware, but there was the difference between the male truth and the female truth, where the male truth always dominates. and I would feel powerless.
So you needed what? In order
safety.
To...
Safety.
Yeah.
Yeah, safety. And then mostly, I think, the feeling of being hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, that your voice is not being used in vain, that you're received. And the same thing goes for him. I mean, I you know, it's on both ends, but we weren't really able to, in the relationship, we weren't really able to find each other there.
Yeah.
When being angry or emotional.
Right. That's yeah. right. That's what happens, is that we're triggered by something. And rather than owning the emotion or the feeling behind the trigger, we blame the other.
Yeah.
Okay. And when that yeah, person feels blamed, then what? What happens?
And he would always blame me for my emotions.
Always?
Yeah, well, not always, but, you know, that would be his main theme, uh-huh. like, because I am very emotional. I can be very emotional. So he would always say something like, what's beneath it? Why are you so emotional? There's something deeper. Go deeper. But, you know, at the same time, it was his defense and he was not going into his own feelings.
So he was avoiding his feelings and asking you about your feelings so that he yes. could say it was your fault.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. And by now I think we have really overcome this, you know, by divorcing also and by not being together anymore and stepping out of this dynamic, we can really meet each other in the middle. So that's something I really want to add.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in order to create that safety, if he would have approached you by saying, hey, I have something I'd like to talk to you about, is now a good time? How would you have responded? How would you take it in, first of all? How would it land?
Yeah, I would like that. You know, I would be open to that. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So asking you if now is a good time would be a way to collaborate, or what would you say? How did that feel?
Yeah, I would feel like I'm taken seriously, mm-hmm. that he really is noticing me and wants to hear my side of the story.
Right.
Yeah.
It's also kind of like establishing some boundaries, because if it's not a good time, you could say no. And then he could ask you, when would be a good time? Maybe an hour?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if that, like, for example, if he would say something, or anybody would say, hey, can I talk to you about something right now? Of course, there's a physical reaction.
Mm.
You may think that you're in trouble. Okay. Yeah. I know I often did.
Yeah. Okay.
And you may need 10, 15 minutes to go and ground or go inside to see what was there, process through it, then come back and give your full attention to the other person. What would you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then I would say that usually we do not take that much time to go into a conversation. You know, we just rush into the problem.
Rush
and then we try, yeah, we try to solve it with our heads without first attuning to ourselves and see whatever we, well, where we are. You know, you don't take a lot of time to get where you are.
Right.
Because you just rush into the discussion.
Yeah, that's what happens. We get triggered. Don't give ourselves space. We're not present. And I think we talked about being present or presencing. Yeah, yeah, being present in the moment. Noticing what's going on for you before you go at somebody else or say, yeah, I want to listen to you, when you're really not present.
Yeah. So how would you do that, being present? Is that?
Well, in conversation for me, so if you were to say you needed to talk to me about something, I know you and I trust you, and I would assume that it's not something bad. However, if it was something bad because your energy felt that way, I might say, okay, I need 5 minutes. Could I have 5 minutes? And how I do it is I explore my body. Okay, so when I feel like I'm in trouble, and this may, you may relate to this a little bit, my heart starts to race. Okay, starts beating really quickly. And my breathing becomes a little shallow. And I feel ungrounded. Okay, so the first thing I do is I check what's here now. That's the question that I ask myself, what's here now? Usually what happens is either I'm scared or I'm mad, okay? One of those two, angry or scared. If I'm scared, I may name that. Okay, I need a minute to calm myself down, get some water, something, or I don't know. Stretch so I can prepare myself to be present for the other person. So if you needed to talk to me about something, I might say, okay, I need to go to the restroom really quickly and get some water. Is that okay? Would you feel okay with that? Would you feel like I was taking you seriously enough to take care of that so I could be present? Or what, would you feel abandoned?
No, I don't think I would feel abandoned. I mean, no, if you take this conversation so seriously, then I would not feel abandoned. I would feel appreciated, I guess.
Yeah.
And
so one of the other things that I think about is I want to give my full attention to you. Therefore, I'm going to make sure that I don't have any distractions. Like my cell phone, I would put probably on airplane mode or turn it off. Computer, I would close the lid. The television, turn it off. And make sure that I was lined up, probably sitting directly across from you. Okay, so I can make eye contact with you. How would you feel about that?
I would feel like you would be the perfect husband.
Yes. I think some people might disagree.
Yeah.
We'll not talk about that right now.
Yeah, maybe, but you know, it's also, you know, mindful. It sounds very mindful. Yeah.
So this is what I actually teach my couples in couples therapy. And it's some techniques that I learned from different experts. The Gottmans and Harville Hendricks and his wife use nonviolent communication or safe communication and things like that. So I also learned it in the men's groups or in the indigenous groups that I am a part of.
Yeah. Can you say something more about that? How does it work there, or is it different?
Sure. I can talk about a little bit. Because everything is sacred and kind of secretive unless you've gone through the initiation. But in the men's groups, it's called bucketing or conflict conversation. And so it would go like this. If I had a conflict with another man, I would say, I have a conflict with this person. One of the other brothers in the group, because that's how we see each other as brothers, would ask if there needed to be a mediator. Okay. And I would say yes. And someone would step up to be the mediator, or I could select who the mediator needed to be based on my need, because I had the conflict. Now, I would ask the mediator in this case would then ask the other man who we have a conflict with if it was okay to do the work. Now, he has a choice. He could say no. Okay. If he said no, then it wouldn't get done with that particular person. So I could ask for someone to step in as that person, and that would be okay. If the man said yes, then the mediator would ask, do you need support? So he could look around in the room and choose someone he trusted to stand behind him as support. And I would do the same thing. I would choose someone to support me. So it goes something like this. Tell this man or woman the data around this thing, this issue. Now, you have to be very specific. There's no charge. There's no blaming. You just tell the information, and the other person will reflect back exactly what you said, hit you the best of their ability, and ask if they received it, if they heard it right, and if there's more. Then I would say, yes, you got it, or no, you didn't get it, and I would elaborate. Okay. And we would go back and forth like that for a while. What's the emotion around this issue? I feel angry. Okay. You feel angry around this issue. The key pieces, though, is that I'm taking ownership. I'm speaking from an I place versus you did. Okay. And the other person is receiving me without judgment and reflecting back exactly to the best of their ability what I said, so that I feel heard. We would go down this, there are a few steps, but we go through this process to get to where the receiver would feel empathy or get exactly how I would be upset. And we'd reflect that back. Yeah, you know, that makes sense. I get why you'd be triggered or upset by that. Yeah. And then possibly thank the speaker or the sender for bringing it to their attention. Then the receiver would have an option of speaking and sharing what their experience was. And they could say, you know, when you spoke, what I heard was, and it triggered me in this way. I felt sad. I felt distant. And I would do the other role. So I would mirror back exactly what I heard. And we would go through the process until we had an understanding. Now, the mediator keeps us on track. That's blame. Okay. That's criticism. And start to bring us back to the present moment. And that's really important, because most conflicts are things from our past. We know that. And the person we have an issue with usually is someone we have transference with. They remind us of a parent or authority in some way. So it's not really about them. So we want to go back to an earlier time. What does this remind you of? Who is this man to you? Or who is this woman to you? Who is this person to you? Oh, shit, that's my angry father. Okay. And then at the end, with the men's work, once the process is over, you would then place your hands on your partner's shoulders, look them right in the eyes, and say, I'm not your angry father. I am. And you give your name. I'm your brother, Haruna. Okay. And then I know you're not my angry father. You're my brother, Haruna. You look at each other, and you thank each other for playing that role or being that person for my healing, my growth, my awareness. So wow. It's a sacred process. It's not just, but once you do it enough and once you become grounded in the technique, it becomes part of you. So then you have, you understand, you have the tools and the resources to then have a healthy communication with someone else.
Yeah, it feels really like you go to a much deeper ground than you would normally do. Like you go to a certain energy space or consciousness space where you meet each other in a different form. Yeah. So that, I can really feel your heart when you're talking about it and really also your clarity. Yeah.
That's right. And it takes a lot of practice and awareness to be very clear. Because we have so many things going on at once. Oh, I'm in trouble. So many really crazy, sometimes irrational thoughts or beliefs that come up.
Yeah, and also very instinctual. It's like our body just freezes or just wants to run.
Exactly. Yeah. The fight, flight, or freeze. And that's what we're going through, actually. It's the reptilian brain that's responding.
Yeah.
But we're teaching. So,
exactly. So now you're staying in contact while you're going through it.
Correct.
At the same time. Yeah.
Correct.
So there's consciousness and the space of consciousness and the habitual patterns.
That's right. So, and it also, the research shows that it, because of neuroplasticity, it changes the brain. Okay.
Yeah.
It rewires the brain. So then we're acting from a more secure, healthy space rather than from that reptilian brain that wants to fight or freeze or fight or run.
Yeah. And does it work in couples? Because I can really, I can really imagine that with your brothers, it's different than with your spouse because you're so, so entangled also in this dynamic. That it's really hard to get this space set without even a mediator. Well, you're the therapist then, but
it really works well with couples. Mm. Okay, I actually give my couples the script to follow.
Okay,
line by line.
And do they do that in your practice space or also at home?
In the practice space first.
Yeah.
And then they practice it at home. I actually ask them to keep a copy on their device. Unfortunately, I just said, put your devices away. But most people, for whatever reason, I found that they don't have the script with them or they don't like using paper. And that's understandable.
Yeah. Wait a minute, honey. Let me fold out my script.
So it's funny because I have couples, I did the script. It doesn't work. I said, what did you do? How did you do it? And they do it. Like, did you ask if they were ready? Oh, I forgot that part.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Did you reflect or mirror back? I did, but I told them that wasn't right. That I said, that's not really mirroring that. How did you do it? I just told them I had a different opinion. Oh, okay.
So you need to go through the steps. Every step counts. Yeah.
Every step counts. It's a little robotic in the beginning, but the more you do it, the more effective it is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't just apply to conflict. Okay. You can use it for showing gratitude to the other person or appreciation. I think Harville Hendrix and his wife call it appreciation.
Nice.
Appreciation time. So with my couples, I also have them do that several times a day. They say, hey, I really like to share some appreciation, how much I appreciate you right now. Is now a good time?
It's now a good time.
Always.
It's always a good time.
Always a good
Bring
time.
it on.
Yeah. There are times when the other person can't receive it. Like for me, in the very beginning, it's like, oh, okay. What do you want from me?
Yeah.
Being suspicious of.
Yeah.
You only show me appreciation when you want X, Y,
when you need something. Yeah, right. No.
So, yeah, making it a part of your weekly, well, I'd like to say daily routine.
Yeah.
But I like to start out with my couples who are very new, 3 times a week.
Yeah.
Appreciate.
So what I really hear in this is also that you have to create like a sacred space. And that's what misses in a lot of relationship, I guess, because we are so busy with our daily lives and getting things done that we don't build in any time for sacred space.
Right.
Yeah.
And I find that the people who have the most difficulty with this say, well, I like to be spontaneous.
Yeah.
Be spontaneous with other things.
Yeah.
And when you have this down and that's a part of your routine, then you won't think about it as much. It'll be fun. It'll be something. Oh my gosh. I want to show you some appreciation time. Okay.
Yeah.
Can is now good? You say, I really appreciate that you brought me coffee while I was writing my book because when I was younger, nobody ever showed me any appreciation when I did something.
Yeah.
So I felt really happy when you did that. And then you would reflect back exactly what I said. You know, to the best of your ability, you really appreciate that I brought you coffee while you're writing your book because it took you back to an earlier time where you weren't feeling appreciated.
And why is that important? I can see it in conflict.
Uh-huh.
Why it's important in conflict? Because it builds your, I guess, your empathy. But why is it also important when you show your appreciation?
Now, when I just said it, I want to make sure you heard me and that you were present. So that's active listening.
Yeah.
2 things. One, recently I had a couple session where the husband was saying appreciative things throughout the day. And the wife would say, he never shows me any appreciation. I said, okay. And I asked the husband, what did you say? What did you do? Oh, I really appreciate your cooking. How did you get her attention? Oh, I just said, I really appreciate your cooking. How do you know she was listening? Because she nodded her head. How do you know she was listening?
Yeah, right. Nodding your head.
Exactly. Yeah. So we don't always hear the other person. We might respond, but we're not actually taking it. So this slows everything down, creates that sacred space, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And it lets me know that you heard me in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So slowing down is very important.
Slowing down is extremely important.
Yeah. In everything.
In everything.
Yeah.
And then the other piece is I can share with you. Remember I said I wasn't appreciated when I was younger. Then after that, I would say I would share with you times when I was appreciated and what it did for me. Then you would repeat, oh, so times when you were appreciated, you really felt a lot of joy or you felt seen.
Yeah.
And you would say, yeah. And then we would talk about that a little bit. But these are the ways that we start to see each other communicate more effectively.
Yeah, and you also get to know each other on a much deeper level.
Exactly. Yeah. And you remember what we said about the transference. So if I say back when I was little, I'm already saying my parents didn't do this. So you're my parent.
Yeah.
And so you did this for me. Now I'm healing that wound around my parent.
Yeah.
That's stuck in my body.
And what I really like also what you said about changing the brain. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, well, when we're young, depending on the trauma, our brains, well, first of all, our frontal lobe isn't fully developed until we're, for women, it happens earlier than for men. That's why women are more rational at times. yeah, so guys are a little more impulsive at times.
A little more behind.
Yeah, I'm gonna get killed for this. They're gonna take my man card.
It's all for healing.
Yeah. Okay, so our brain isn't fully developed. And if we've never experienced or have never had any certain experiences, those wires aren't connected. Okay. Until we start doing the work to heal them. So when we start to put into practice all of these different elements, these tools, our brain starts to reform itself, connects those wires. So for example, in personality disorder, for borderline personality disorder, person's wires aren't fully functioned, so, or created. So when they hear something that sounds like criticism, they get flooded. I mean, we all get flooded to a degree, but with BPD, they really get flooded and they can't hear anything. They feel defensive, like they have to save themselves because literally in their minds, they're under attack. So that they have a different type of treatment that's more effective. It's dialectical behavior therapy. So questioning the thoughts in the moment, okay? And using mindfulness techniques to know that they're not under attack. It's a work in progress.
Yeah.
So basically that's what you're doing in this moment. You're saying, I'd like to talk to you about something. You're not in trouble. I had to say that a lot in my intimate relationships with this specific partner. You're not in trouble. I just like to talk to you about something. The initial reaction with her was and hyper anxiety.
Yeah.
Okay. And breathing was shallow and rapid, ungrounded, totally in fear.
Yeah.
Until I learned how to do these techniques, the first maybe 6 months to a year, I would freak out like, oh my God, I did something wrong. Oh my God, I'll never bring up anything again.
Yeah.
Okay. And then after I started implementing some of these techniques, okay, you're not in trouble. Breathe with me. Again, before that, I would say, okay, I'm not going to discuss this. I would withdraw. I would get pissed off. I can never talk to you about anything. Never listen. Blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of blame. And I'd say, forget it. Just forget it. And walk off brooding, upset, feeling like I don't matter.
Yeah.
My thoughts don't matter. My feelings or emotions don't matter. And of course, you build up resentment when the other person doesn't hear you. Okay. Yeah. Feelings of not being important enough.
Yeah.
So once I started understanding what was going on, one, I would have to constantly remind her, I'm not your dad. Because that was her thing. Her father was the one who was abuser, so to speak. So that's the transference that she had with me. I'm not your dad. It's okay.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that you're constantly taking care of the other person. They're yeah. not doing their work.
Yeah.
And there's yeah. no growth. So a good mediator is extremely important in the beginning to work through this. I want to say also that the BPD for her, the flooding, rapid speech, manipulation. So I'll give an example. If I said, hey, I need to talk to you about something. Even if I said now a good time, there would be the manipulation of stroking my thigh or this one is classic. Oh, but first, could you just hold me? Hold me. So, but I need to talk to you about something. I know, but you just hold me for a minute. I just need to be held. Okay. Feels off, but you know, caretaker, you know, all of that, you know, codependent behavior on my part.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would dismiss myself. Say, okay. We don't end up making love, having sex or whatever. I come back. Hey, I'd like to talk to you about.
No conversation. No conversation.
No conversation. No conversation at all. I was in a whole different world, man.
Yeah.
But it was still important to talk about this issue. No, 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 no. You made love to me. You told me you loved me. You can't be mad at me.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no healthy communication. That's why I'm passionate about this.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. And it really helps also when I hear you talk, like it really helps as soon as partners, we get to, you know, recognize this cues of the body, like this hyperventilation, or in the case of my husband, that I could really see his eyes, how they changed from being present to being, you know, blocked in a way. But in the first years of our relationship, I didn't see that. So I didn't know he was in defense and that he was not in contact. I thought he was in contact and being really real and, you know, wise. But no, it was his defense. So in the course of your relationship, you really start to see those cues when someone else is in defense or
right.
or reacting.
Yeah. You start to understand each other and predict or project something else is going to happen. So your ex-husband's eyes would get really wide.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he can be really soft and in contact, mm-hmm. and like we can have really great conversations. But when we were not that long together, there was also a lot of fear on his side of commitment and being together. Mm-hmm. And then he would, you know, turn the story upside down. And that's what we all do, of course. He turned the story upside down so it fits our motives. But, you know, after a few years, I could really see that his eyes would go blank, or there's a different expression in the eyes mm-hmm. when somebody is really in connection and when they are out of connection.
Right.
You can see the difference between someone who is really seeing you and who is not.
Right.
And just projecting or defending. Yeah.
Yeah. So
and you can feel it, of course. You can feel it, of course, in your body when you are relaxed, then you are in contact. And when you're uptight, you're having a fight. Even if you don't see it on the outside, that's a fight, but still, you know.
Oh yeah, energetically there's something going on.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a scary thing when the person that you're with and you have a disagreement with dissociates.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's extreme. When they dissociate, you don't know how to bring them back. You don't know where they're going, what's going on. And that's extreme fear, maybe post-traumatic stress.
So
the first thing that we as trauma specialists or trauma therapists do is help the person to ground and relax. Relaxation takes people out of that anxious state. Because you'll notice every single time the breathing is shallow or not breathing at all. The person's holding their breath. They're ungrounded. Yeah. So mindfulness techniques really work well. Feel where you are. Smell what you're smelling. And the good trick, and I'm gonna get in trouble for it, telling this trick. But anyway, the good trick is, hey, do you smell popcorn? What happened when I asked you that question?
Well, I have to laugh. I mean, it's funny. It's funny. And then I think, are we going to have movie nights? That's my next thought. And then I think, is this an American thing? We would never ask, do you smell popcorn, because it's not around. I mean, maybe at a theater, movie theater, but not, you know, not at home.
Right. It takes you out of that trance. And so that's what it's supposed to do. It engages your senses. So the smell of butter on the popcorn, maybe the sound of popcorn popping, the taste of the popcorn. You know? And so it brings a person to that scene if they like popcorn, or if they've ever eaten popcorn. Or they're just like, what the hell's wrong with you?
Probably.
Popcorn.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But you want to engage as many of the senses as possible to help a person come back. I learned that in NLP training. Neuro-linguistic programming.
So what happens when the brain starts to change then?
Then you start to become, act more from a place of logic, presence. You're releasing different chemicals, those scary chemicals of I have to run. You don't get flooded anymore. You can start to think things through because the wiring is there. Wait, I'm not really in trouble. So you start to understand the difference between a real threat and a perceived threat. Okay. Real threat, actually getting hit is a real threat. Someone raising their hand to hit is a real threat based on information that took place when you were younger or different experiences. A perceived threat is when someone stands in front of you and you immediately project that you're going to be hit again. Okay. And in my case, with when we were dating, my fiance, I would go to visit her house. I couldn't find her immediately, so I call out her name. Me calling out her name was that perceived threat.
She
was a freak. And I did not know what I did wrong. And that's how I internalized things. I did something wrong. Until she was able to convey to me, oh, my dad would yell out my name. And I think, I don't know if this is a European thing also, but for some reason, American parents that I know will call out their child's whole name.
With the middle the name. Surname also.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't do that, no. But I'm not sure if anybody else does it. Maybe. I would never do that. No.
Yeah. just think
it's really strange.
It's
really weird. Yeah.
My parents didn't have to call out my old name. I knew.
Tony. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. My daughter also knows, you know, when I, you know, when I'm there, I'm there. Yeah. She doesn't move. I gave her a lot of space. She can do anything, but not forever.
Exactly. In most households, it's a look. You say it, and then you give the kid a look, raise your eyebrows.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for some reason, some parents do that. They call out their entire their kid's name and they know they're in trouble.
Yeah.
So for her dad, when he would call out her name, he said it a certain way. She knew that she was going to get into trouble. Mm-hmm. So if I came into the room, didn't know, hey, she would have a panic attack.
Yeah.
And it would freak me out. So I've never experienced that in my life.
No.
Oh my gosh. So we had to establish some rules of how I would enter and what I would say and how I could say it.
Yeah.
So that's another thing with couples or friends or partners. It's important to establish some rules.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Total.
So like what kind of rules? I mean, what would you advise like a couple?
Okay. So Harville Hendrix wrote a book. I cannot remember the name of it, but anyway, Getting the Love You Want. Okay, he talks about your imago. Your imago is usually a form of your parents. Okay, so when you find your partner, they represent your parents. Most of the time, it's their negative quality. That you're wanting to heal unconsciously. This is what motivates us to be with certain people. And then there was another guy who wrote a book, John Gray, called Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've read that one.
Yeah. And in his book, he talks about how men are fixers and women are listeners or talkers. They want to they want to engage in conversation. I read that book. I internalized that book because I had planned on not being a regular stereotypical dude.
So how did that work out?
It didn't.
No, it didn't.
It did not work out. And in fact, it reversed our roles. Okay. She was the fixer.
Yeah.
I was the person who would bring up the conversation. Immediately. And this also goes back to her, the emotional and mental health stuff. To avoid getting into trouble, if I said, hey, I want to talk to you about something. It's like, okay, I won't do that anymore. But I didn't even tell you not what I needed or whatever. I'm going to fix it. And a lot of times I wouldn't even know. She would just take care of it. I said, no, that's not what I wanted to have a conversation about it, not for you to just take over. No, 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 but there's nothing for you to be mad about anymore.
Yeah. No. So that takes away the space every time, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So the space to meet each other.
Right.
I know I've done these kind of things also. Than just to, you know, I will fix it or I'll take care of it or I won't do it again. Will not happen again. Will not happen again. Okay, it will not happen again.
Until the next time.
Are you satisfied now?
Yeah, we're complicated fucking people, you know?
Yeah.
But it's to avoid pain. Okay.
Yeah.
Like Freud said, we move towards pleasure. And avoiding pain. I'd like to say that there is pleasure in pain for some people.
Yeah. A lot of times.
A lot.
Yeah.
So interrupting is another thing. And that was a huge deal in my relationship. Okay, you got to listen without interrupting.
Yeah.
But
one of the ground rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the ground rules. And you can tell, for me, I'm a very visual person and also energy. I can feel the energy. So when someone takes a deep breath in as I'm talking, I know that they want to interrupt.
Yeah.
And so for me, I would get caught off. Okay, whatever. And I would dismiss myself.
Yeah.
Whatever. What do you want? And they would say whatever they want.
Yeah.
So, God. Okay. So then you end up taking care of the other person. Yeah. I would anyway. I would take care of the other person. And that builds resentment.
So here it can really help to introduce the talking stick.
That's right. Yes. Say more about the talking stick.
So, well, I know from indigenous cultures that they had the talking stick. So you, when you hold it, you're the one speaking and the other ones are receiving. Mm-hmm. So, and as soon as you're finished, you decide when you're finished, then you can hand over the talking stick to the other and then you reverse roles.
Yeah,
where the other one is the listener.
That's right.
And you can speak anything, like you can, you know, in connection with what there is present, but you can take your time. And I think we do not have a lot of time to be heard.
Yeah, that's right. We don't have a lot of time to be heard. Most people have a lot of shit going on in their own brains and are busy.
Yeah.
And are afraid.
You know,
to be perfectly honest, they're afraid of being shamed or they can't tolerate it.
Yeah.
So the talking stick. So the men's group work that I was describing is based on indigenous people, based on the Hopi tradition. So I went through my initiation and that's how I learned to do that, the bucketing piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the talking stick or talking feather or talking knife. Okay, Michael Mervosh, former teacher, clinical psychologist, used to run the men's groups in Miami. And he would bring this huge buck knife.
Oh, really? Wow.
Like, Michael, there is conflict. You do know that when they're holding that knife, if they're not very stable, that becomes, you know,
wow.
And so can the stick, technically, but it's sacred. It's supposed to be a sacred tool, whatever that tool is.
But what's specific about the knife then when it's
used? It represents the talking stick for him. And I don't know, whatever work that he does, men's work that he does, he uses, at that time he used a knife. I don't know if he's still doing that. He does the hero's journey, hero and heroine's journey.
Yeah, I think it's also about clarity, isn't it? I think the knife is also about clarity and cut to the chase and be direct and speak without being scared.
Maybe. I like that.
Yeah.
Maybe you're right on. I never asked.
Yeah.
No. I just kept my eye on the knife.
Yeah.
And who was holding it.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's important, like you said, the talking stick, the person who holds the stick has the floor. The other person listens.
Yeah.
So there are people who get very antsy when they have to just listen.
Yeah.
It's building up. And that's another reason for the mirroring or the reflecting. So I have something to do.
Oh, cool. They have to listen because they have to reproduce afterwards.
Right.
And not their own thoughts.
Right.
Exactly. The other ones. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, that's smart.
Uh-huh. It is smart. So story that I tell when I teach healthy relationships. When I was with when we were having conversations, the rule was no interrupting. Okay, so I would talk, and then it was her turn to reflect or mirror back. And she would have a big smile on her face. I'm like, okay, what's going on? I just said this stuff. Said, honey. Said, what? Did you notice? I said, did I notice what? I didn't interrupt. And I said, yeah, you didn't interrupt. But what did I say? I don't know, but I didn't interrupt.
Oh, my God.
And all I did, I burst out laughing. And I said, you know what? You didn't interrupt.
Awesome. Thank you.
So, yeah, man, it was wow. It's like asking a child to sit on their hands at times.
Yeah.
Don't move. They have so much going on, and one thing at a time until you can learn the process. But yeah, it was like, it was such a big deal.
Yeah,
I didn't interrupt.
Yes. Totally missing the points, but whatever.
Hey, man. That's cool. These are the strategies that we use, and we can go into further detail at another time, and I can lay out the steps and even describe in full detail the steps and how we listen both sides, and maybe we can even role play.
Yeah, nice. You put me on the stand.
Yes.
No, I like it. Yeah, I like it. It's great. I really like this space you're creating. So I can really feel that, how this idealistic world of relationship works.
Yeah. Well, we don't always have good examples of relationship.
No. Especially around communication. There's so much, you know. I don't think my parents were communicators on intellectual level.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to contact and hearing each other out and taking each other seriously, there's no conversation at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you learn.
Right. So I want to say to that, so when most people are in conflict, we're coming from a place of child consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, whatever age of the original trauma or wound, that's where we're acting from. So imagine two people in child consciousness communicating, well, not really communicating. You're communicating, but you're not doing it in a healthy way. Can't be heard. There is no. Receiving or reflecting.
No.
And that's
the
passion.
Yeah, thank you. It's really cool. Yeah.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
I like it. You can do it with kids too. Kids are They need to learn this. I think they should teach it in school.
Yeah. It would be so great if, you know. But I think my kid learns about these things, not in this really, you know, particular way, but I can hear her already, you know, like naming her feelings and saying, I know it's not your fault, but I'm just angry. I want to be angry. I know it's not about you, but I'm so angry. And then I can say, yeah, I can see you're angry. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, that's important to validate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we can't always do it as parents because sometimes we get triggered too.
We get really triggered.
Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, I said to my mom, I said to my mom, you're not a real mom.
Oh, man. Ow.
I know. Well, the idealized image of a mom was from early television. Have you, do you know the show The Brady Bunch? Do they play that in Europe?
Well, we didn't have television when I was growing up. I mean, like the only ones in the neighborhood. I mean, it was not like a Dutch thing. I guess other people knew the Brady Bunch. I don't think I've ever seen it, but I'm not sure.
Okay, good. Well, in that household, in most American television households, specifically the white parents on TV, they were always listening and so nice. And, you know, they didn't yell at their, well, they yelled at their kids, but they didn't curse them out, you know, or, and so my mom was completely the opposite of that version of mom. And I don't know how it came out of my mouth, why it came out of my mouth at that moment. It was definitely a lower self jab. She said, "So?" And it totally took away the power that I had. Yeah, I just sat there stunned. Wait, hold on. You're okay with that? So I know that it came from a place of wanting to maybe sting her. I was about seven, maybe. And her response is, "So?" Okay. So I never said that again.
No, you still remember it till the day.
Absolutely. Still remember. Thank you, yeah, for listening in and asking the question. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you too for sharing. It's cool.
So I want to show you
Maybe
some
when I
dishes.
ever.
Is now a good time?
Yes, it is. Bring it on. Bring it on.
Next time. Next time. I built it up and now you're
No.
waiting. I really
Yes,
appreciate
I'm
how
totally ready, and you take it away from me.
I really appreciate how you are here every week and ready to go and very supportive of this process and the passion that I have for bringing forward, you know, all of this. Because I wasn't always supported when I was growing up, when it came to creative things. Not only wasn't I supported, often it was taken away from me as if the other person was responsible for my creation. So I want to thank you for, for creating this space and holding space for me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So I heard you say that. That you really appreciate my support and how I show up every week and how we manifest this creative endeavor or thing together. Yeah. So.
Then you ask, did you get it?
Oh, did you get it?
No, did you get it?
Oh,
So
did I
not, did I
get
get it? Did I? You say, did
Oh,
I
did
ask?
I? Yeah, did I get it?
Yes. And then you ask, is there more?
Is there more?
Yes. I just want to make one point, which is I didn't get a lot of appreciation when I asked.
Yeah. You didn't get a lot of appreciation. So then I want to say that I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
And that this coming together in this space is really nurturing. And also holding space for me to for going through my, well, life and process and giving me a lot of softness and warmth and space. Thank you.
You are welcome. I just want to say, I heard you say that you really appreciate me for this bringing, coming together with this endeavor, some nurturing, and supportive to you and your whole life, bringing forward your whole life. Did I get it?
Yeah. Yes, you got it.
Is there more?
Yes. What I want to add is maybe that, you know, when growing up, I have felt very alone and that I've done basically everything in my life alone, and which gave me a lot of strength and power. And I'm very capable. At the same time, I really love to do it together. Yeah.
So when you were growing up, you had to do a lot of things alone.
Yeah.
And it empowered you. And it was lonely. And you really loved doing this together.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you're welcome.